Welcome to Leave 'Em Laughing, Using Humor for Serious Impact by Steve Hughes. This dynamic program demonstrates humor and shows you how to use laughter in your presentation to be more likable, effective, and memorable. Here's Steve Hughes.
British researchers recently made an amazing discovery. You're probably wondering, did they find a way to solve global hunger? No. Global climate change? Close. They answered the age-old question that I'm sure many of you have been wrestling with lately, and that is this. What is the funniest animal? Okay, what is the funniest animal? And what they wanted to find out is what animal, when used in a joke, they concocted a joke out of nowhere, just kind of made it up, has an animal inside of it, and they told it to different groups of people, and all they did was they changed which animal was used in the joke. And so then the measurement was simply which animal got the most laughter. So I'm gonna see if you guys can help me pick out of the top four finalists, which was the numero uno funny animal. Okay, so the four finalists were A, the monkey, B, weasel, C, chicken, or D, the duck. So monkey, weasel, chicken, or duck. So you only vote once, right? So show of hands. How many of you think it was A, the monkey? Raise them high, don't be bashful. Okay, good. All right. Very courageous of you. It's never A, right? So, good. But I appreciate your honesty there. All right, so and no voting twice. All right, how about B thinks it's the weasel? Yeah, that's pretty good. How about C, chicken? Tastes like chicken. All right, not bad. And how about D, the duck? All right, so, okay, here we are. The animal that got the most laughter for them when they told this joke was, surprisingly enough, Aflac, was the duck. As the duck, and for some reason, they can't really quantify why, but they just know it to be true, and that's this. Short syllable words, especially those with a hard consonant, like the k kind of a sound, generate more laughter. So if you happen to be a writer for, let's say, Letterman or Leno or something, and you could finish a joke for them with either the line, it only cost me a dollar, or it only cost me a buck, you would definitely go with the buck because that would get more laughter. So first learning point here, feel free to write it down, and that's this. Try when you communicate with people, use as many words that rhyme with duck. Okay? So, well, okay, better, maybe not. Okay, I think maybe not. No, it's good. So some of the people are like, why is that funny? No, it's go through the alphabet. You'll figure out why. So, but then think of it this way, on almost a more serious note, but along the same lines, the Yankelevich Monitor came out a few years ago with an article, some research findings. And the Yankelevich Monitor, if those of you are not familiar, is a periodical that looks at all sorts of consumer data and research and surveys and things and finds out what is like the finger, like putting the finger on the pulse of America. Where are our minds? What are we thinking about? From politics to money to societal trends, that sort of thing. Well, in this particular issue of the Monitor, here's what they found that was very surprising to them. They asked people, what's missing from your life? Just open-ended, what's missing from your life? Here's what they expected to hear. Well, my bank account could be bigger, right? Wish I had some more free time. Probably, who wouldn't want that? Maybe there's something missing in the love department. Who knows? But whatever it might be, they did not expect this answer. They said, Americans, what is missing from your life? You know what the number one answer was? Fun. They said, fun. I don't have fun anymore. Used to have fun. I know what fun is. Fun is great. I don't really have much fun anymore. Right, now think of it this way. Think of the last 10 movies you saw at the movie theater, or if you haven't gone in a long time, the last 10 movies you've rented from Netflix or some other provider. How many of those were documentaries? I'm guessing very few, right? Feel like, not many. All right, or if you look at the most viral videos online, the videos that get past, not just the most viewed on YouTube, because those tend to be movie trailers and music videos, but the ones that people get in your inbox, and ha, it's so funny, and you just have to send it to 10 other friends to kind of interrupt their day, right? Those tend to be the humorous videos, the evolution of dance, if you haven't seen this one, it's classic, Charlie bit my finger. Have you seen that one? It's two little kids, it's very funny. Or the wedding dance from Jill and Kevin kind of coming down that was spoofed on The Office. In other words, people, here's the conclusion. People are wanting and seeking out and craving to be entertained, enthused, and enthralled, and they want to have fun. So if that's the case, that's what people want, left to their own devices, why would we rob them of that in our communication, in our daily interaction with them in business? Why would we hold that back if that's what people are craving? So the answer is, I'll tell you why. And that's what we're going to talk about today. So I have a little handout. If it's on the floor or somewhere, it's very simple. All you have to do is fill in, I think, four lines if you want to play along and fill in the blanks. And I'll let you pull those out here real quickly. I know some people have their chair leg on them. It's not a nice way to treat a handout, but that's okay. Something I said. And I do also want to say thank you so much. I've been really lax in my Christmas shopping for my daughters. And you guys bringing those gifts. I promised myself I wouldn't cry. But no, that's very nice you're doing that. That's a very cool thing. But I'm going to talk today about, with humor, the four L's of humor. And make sure it's L, not a word or anything. The four L's of humor. And we're going to understand what those are. I'll go ahead and give them to you now if you want to write them down and kind of sit back and relax. The four L's of humor are this. You have to understand the laws of laughter. That's number one. Number two is that humor makes you more likable. Who wouldn't want that? And by the way, when you fill these in, the L's are already taken care of, so you can only have to do a few letters. All right, number three, it helps people listen more, so they'll pay attention to you. I'll run through these again in case you're just catching up. And number four, you just have to look for it. Just look for it and you'll find it. So you have to understand the laws of laughter. Humor makes you more likable. It helps people listen more. And then number four, all you have to do is look for it. Those are the four L's. And it's all lovely and all good. Now, the other thing I want to say, which is kind of interesting, a book came out, and it's in my little reference section there at the bottom, The Levity Effect. Thousands of managers, CEOs, high-level folks were interviewed across a whole spectrum of businesses, and they asked them all sorts of questions, kind of like the Yankelevich monitor, but on a different level. And they looked at people, and one of the gauges was, do you use humor? Do you joke around? Do you do this kind of thing? And here's what they found. People who will use and incorporate humor into their everyday business lives, not to be silly, yuck-it-up time, but just do their professional, credible, honest working in their business, but they do it with a kind of lighthearted attitude and they have a fun spirit to them. Those people tend to, are you sitting down? Okay, good. They tend to make more money. They tend to have more loyal coworkers and employees, and they tend to be promoted more easily and more readily to higher positions. So giddy up, that's pretty good. And we all know folks, by the way, who take what should otherwise be work they should have done, and they try to cover it over with humor, like, I really do my work, boss, but let me make you laugh. We're not talking about that. We're talking about people who are strong, confident, good workers, good employees, good managers, but they do it with a sense of a twinkle in their eye, and they have a little bit of fun about that. So we're gonna unpack that as we go through here. So if that's good enough for you, that's where we're headed. This is like flight 227 to Cleveland. If that sounds good, then that's where we're headed. Otherwise, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure, and you can get on with the rest of your day, and we'll see you later. But let's look at the four laws of laughter. The four laws of laughter are simply these. If you look at anything that's ever funny or humorous or makes you laugh or is just a funny situation, all four of these things I'm about to mention had to be present in some form or another. And if even one of them's missing, it ain't funny. It's just not going to work. So here they are. The first one is it has to be based in truth. Whatever is funny has to have some kind of element of truth. If it's not based in reality, see ya, not very funny. Number two, it has to have an element of surprise. You can't have seen it coming. There's always a classic person says, let me tell you a joke, and they throw out the punchline by accident. And like, oh, but let me tell it anyway. Well, please, I'm very busy. I know it's not going to be funny. Let's just move on, shall we? The next one is it has to be understood or understandable. And to explain this part of it, you've heard someone tell you a joke or a story, something like, oh my gosh, this is so funny, blah, 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 happened. They get to the end, and then they say, I guess you had to be there. You're like, well, I wish I were because you just wasted 2 minutes of my life with that little thing. But what happens, if you think about it in their mind, it was funny, it was enjoyable, it was very humorous, but they couldn't quite recreate the entire element there to really have you understand why it was funny, so you kind of didn't laugh. So one of these things was not present. Lastly, and probably the most important, is there must be permission to laugh. There must be a freedom in the atmosphere, in the room, in the area, in your company, your department, your association, whatever, that people feel free to laugh. And the best example of how this isn't happening is in NBC's The Office, right? So if you're one of the five people who are not up to date on that, let me just recap real quickly. The Office is basically a pseudo-documentary sitcom about a small division of a huge paper company. The small division's in Scranton, Pennsylvania. And it's very dysfunctional, so that's why it's funny. But the leader, the manager, is Michael Scott, and this is the biggest SOB, idiotic, misogynist, narcissistic dolt you've ever met in your life. He's just a complete backwards loony. But he thinks he's funny. He thinks he's a great manager. And so when he'll come out, and here's why, talk about permission to laugh. He'll come out and it's a very unhealthy atmosphere there. And he'll say, okay, tomorrow's gonna be like Hawaiian shirt day. And we're all gonna come wearing Hawaiian shirts and we're all doing a hula contest. And so everyone shows up in their Hawaiian shirt, just standing around, very uncomfortable, wishing to high heaven they were not there. And it's not very funny. So he tries to add humor, but because there's not permission, there's not a good atmosphere to laugh, it just kind of goes away. So let's now look, and by the way, the other thing about permission to laugh is one of the cool things about humor is it's basically this giant social agreement that people have. You ever seen someone laugh, if you've ever been at a comedy club or seen someone just make you laugh, and you see people in the audience going, you got that right, like, that's what I'm talking about, that kind of thing. That's often what humor does for us, that we all laugh about something that no one wants to talk about, or maybe it's a sacred cow or whatever it might be, but we all get to laugh and we get to kind of share in that experience, much like the court jester back in the Middle Ages, if they lived long enough or didn't get their head chopped off. So, but let's now look at the four elements of humor. Let's test it and see if they really work, okay? On something my daughter told me when she was 5, and she's a few years older now. But actually, before I do that, I want to ask you, I meant to ask you this earlier. I'm not a fashion machine. I wish there were Granimals for adults. I don't know how to dress very well, but I usually run my outfits past my wife. I wasn't able to today. And true, honest opinion, if you could. Do these pants make me look bald? Okay, all right, okay, thank you for laughing. Okay, I'm gonna say it does. Let's now, for fun, let's test the four things why that was funny, just for fun. Okay, number one, is it based in truth? Ding! Okay, right? If I had a giant fro like I did back in high school, I had really wavy hair. I wasn't a Muppet, but I did have kind of wavy hair. It wouldn't be very funny. All right, number two, was there an element of surprise? Yeah, because especially when you hear that term, do these pants make me look, what do you think I might say? Exactly, right? It's not something that guys usually say, so you're like, whoa, where's this coming from? Bald, yuckity up. Okay, was it understandable, number three? Did it make sense? Okay, cool. And then finally, was there permission to laugh? Okay, I think so. All right, so that all works there. Let me now do my daughter's thing, and let's see if it runs through the same test. She was 5, and I was just getting my business going, and she knew I did funny things. She said, Daddy, I have a great idea for your next funny talk. I'm like, well, thank you for calling it that. I call it serious training, communication. But, and she said, here it is. Okay, great. So I get out my pen and paper. I was excited. And she says, say this. Say, I was walking down the street, and suddenly a pancake flew out of my face. And I said, okay, great. I said, what else you got? She says, well, that's it. I said, okay, let me workshop that a little. I might try to rework it a little bit. All right, now let's just for fun, let's go reverse order, okay? Let's just see, because it doesn't fit all four. Was there permission to laugh? Sure. Did you understand it? I mean, it's bizarre, but you understood it. I mean, okay. Was there an element of surprise? Who didn't see it? No one saw the pancake. It's like, oh, you know, woo, okay. Now, what about this? Was it based in truth? No, because usually, unless at least where I'm from, in lovely Midwest America here, baked breakfast goods don't fly to people's faces just out of the blue, right? So that's why, and I'm glad you didn't laugh. Once in a while, a group laughs. I'm like, you're ruining it. You know, it's not supposed to happen. But you see, so even just if one element is not there, it's not gonna work. So if you do want to incorporate humor and add it in there, I'm not saying you have to analyze it like, well, let's put this through the computer. But if it wasn't funny or you're not sure it's going to work, make sure all four of those things are in place. That's kind of got to be there to make it happen. And I looked at it this way. A few years ago, anyone here ever had a chance to plant either just a single plant or even like a small garden anywhere, ever had a chance to plant or doing kind of, okay. When I first got married, we bought a house, I thought all you do is you dig a little hole, you know, like an auger or something, you take a seed, pop it in, done, you know, start growing. And if you've ever tried that, you know it really doesn't work that way. If you really want to have a garden, especially like a perennial garden, to grow well, you have to do a bunch of things. You take the dirt out. You add organic material and peat moss and manure and compost and stuff. You put that back in. Of course, you add the seed. You make sure it's mulched. You make sure you get the proper lighting. You have to add water. You have to fertilize. Whatever you have to do, all these things have to be in there. And then and only then is there really a chance for the plant to grow. And that's what it's like with humor. You need to have all these things kind of ready to go and then let humor have a chance to sparkle and flourish and kind of grow out of it. It's not something you can just use. In fact, even though I have the term use in the headline here or the title, humor is not something you use like hair gel, right? It is something you incorporate and it becomes a part of you. It's almost an attitude as much as it is a process or a go and do type of thing. So those are the four laws of humor. If you understand those, you're good to go, right? So we got first L under our belts here. Okay, number two, makes you more likable. Now, how about you guys? Who's like, I'm way too likable. I could not use any more people liking me. I need to shut that down, you know? All my people follow me on Twitter. I have 7 now, which is cool, including my mother-in-law. So By the way, a friend of mine started following, just told me the other day, he started following the Dalai Lama on Twitter. And then the Dalai Lama spun around and started following him, which kind of cracks me up. So when you look up Dalai Lama, I think as of today, he has like 150,000 people following him, and he's following about 140,000. So that makes for a busy day. Anyway, just kind of interesting. You want to follow Dalai Lama, he'll turn around and follow you back, which is kind of neat. Okay, but on the likability factor, there are some very cool physiological benefits. I won't go into them too much, but just give you a quick little overview. And you may have heard some of this before, but it bears repeating. When you laugh, what goes on in your brain is essentially endorphins are being released. And endorphins are the chemical cousins, for those of you who are not chemists, of opium and morphine. Right? So not too shabby. So here's endorphins and their cousins over here, opium and morphine. Talk about a fun Thanksgiving. You know, woohoo! That's a party right there. I want to be at the fun table. So you cannot help but feel better. In the moment when you're laughing, just in that particular moment in time, as that's going on, you cannot help but actually start to feel better. Just that's how our brains are kind of set up to work. So even as we think about today, just let's go for fun. For this hour and a half we're here together, number of people in the room, just guess, how many think cumulative emails are piling up in our inbox, just for fun? I have no idea, but what do you think? Okay. Yeah, just for fun, what do you think? For all of us together, what do you think? At least several hundred, yeah, thousand. What do you think? I mean, that's a lot. So we got a lot of stuff going on. We have busy clients, we have customers, we have members, we have things we have to make happen. But you cannot help during that moment when you're laughing about a pancake flying out of someone's face or these pants make me look bald, just for that moment in time, you're chuckling and yucking it up, you start to feel better for that particular time. The same thing that happens, there's other things that go on that actually reduce stress hormones, that actually boost your T cells and actually boost your immunity. So no one should get sick during this talk, hopefully. Afterwards, I can't guarantee, but at least during, you're fine. And always wash your hands, thank you. And but there's all these reasons why, that's why we feel better. It's a great thing for us to feel better. Now, the other thing, who are my to-do list people, by the way? Anybody here a big to-do list person? You like to, whether it's online or not. Do you know when you write something down, you go and do it, you come back and you check it off the list, there's a little endorphin rush as well. So for those of you who aren't list people, even if you do something and you didn't write it down, go back, write it down afterwards and check it off right off the bat. Just to give yourself a little kick. Just because, let's be honest, sometimes there's a Saturday you wake up and you really didn't do much by 9 o'clock at night and you can at least say, hey, wake up. Do! You know, there you go. lay around and watch TV. Bing! I'm a machine. So I'm getting stuff done. But the neat thing about humor is that as you do it, people cannot help as they're feeling better, they're gonna start to feel better about you. In other words, think of humor almost as the opposite of junior high. Okay, so do you remember? Thank you. People are like, where is this guy going? Do you remember junior high? There was always the one or two or a group of kids who made themselves feel better by pushing everybody else down, like all that kind of stuff. And you go home crying to mom and say, they're making me feel bad. And your mom always said, well, if they're going to act like that, you don't want to have friends like that anyway. And of course, you're like, they're the cool people. You know, I want to be friends with them. But humor is actually the exact opposite. As you can, in any kind of communication situation, especially a live type of thing, whether it's a 5-minute, you know, update, a quarterly meeting, or whatever it might be, the audience always wants to feel as good or a little bit even superior to the speaker to a certain degree. So when you can make someone laugh, you're going to make them actually feel better automatically. They're going to start to feel elevated a little bit. And let's say something does go wrong once in a while and you mess up or something. If you can be willing enough to make a joke about yourself or take yourself down a peg or two, again, that starts to elevate the audience and then they're going to start to feel like a superstar. Because back to the opposite of junior high, when you see a speaker or a communicator go up there and they think, like, I'm all this, I'm all that, and I'm fantastic, the audience is like, get out of here, you know, shut it down. So if you can use humor and incorporate it, it will help you come across as more approachable, more likable, more real, and in fact, even more trustworthy. Because if you're able to take a little pot shot at yourself, I mean, don't go on forever, but this isn't therapy, but just make a little pot shot at yourself on something that's going on, you'd be amazed at the feeling that can have of elevating the entire audience. And people want to feel elevated, as we said before. Very big thing. So, by the way, other thing, if you look at Match.com or go to eHarmony or any of these kind of sites, and you look at all the surveys when people ask each other, what do you look for most in a mate? What do you look for in a life partner? What do you want to find? What's always the number one answer? Sense of humor. Which apparently wasn't true in high school for me. But but apparently it is now. But seriously, people seek that out and say, gosh, I want a sense of humor. I mean, survey after survey after survey, they want that thing. It's what helps make you likable. So if you can do it, Run with it, have some fun. It makes you more likable. So question is this, if you could use more humor and incorporate it into what you do, and you're hence able to be more likable, both at work and home, what kind of impact could that have on your relationships with your, you know, close folks to you, employees, whatever it might be? How could that kind of benefit you? Just kind of tuck that away and think about it on your way home there. Okay, that's our second L. We are doing fabulous on our timing here. I'm going to flip over here. And we're going to move to help you listen more. Before we do that, I want to ask you a very serious question. Why are people reluctant to use humor? Let's throw it out there. Why are people in a business setting, business situation, why are people reluctant to use humor? What are some things that hold them back? And don't, yes? Yeah, if the joke doesn't go over well, you can really be in trouble. How about
fear of failure?
Yeah, fear of, exactly. Yeah, I like to call it the crickets effect. And then that's not a duck. You know, you hope like a big crook would come out and just kind of pull you off stage. It can be tough. What are some other things? I saw some hands over here. What are some other reasons why people don't want to use humor or are reluctant to use humor in any kind of setting?
People that use humor, a lot of people don't think they're serious.
Exactly right. You might hurt your professional credibility. Absolutely, completely agree. How about some others? People say it might offend somebody, easily happen. But a lot of things go wrong. Well, let me kind of answer that by essentially with one word. If you can incorporate your humor and make it relevant to what you're talking about, not just like this kind of scenic overlook. You know, when you're driving, you're cruising along, we got to get to here. You think about your driving. Once in a while, like, oh, it's a beautiful senior, it's not a senior overlook, that'd be kind of weird. A scenic overlook. unless it's an old folks home, who knows? But so you pull over here to the side, and you look where it might be very lovely and nice, but that's not helping you get to your destination. It's kind of cool, oh, it's beautiful, it's neat, let's take a picture, but it's not helping you get to where you need to go. Whereas when people go wrong with humor, especially let's say they tell a joke and it's not very funny, 9 times out of 10, they told a joke that really didn't have any meaning to what was going on. They just thought, well, I'm communicating something here, I better add some fun to it, I feel like people are dying. Ah. So they go ahead and throw something in that's not very funny, and then it's incredibly uncomfortable. And my two least favorite words in any presentation, I'll open up and tell you, are but seriously. You've seen someone do like, almost like they start off and they'll do a little joke or something, ha ha, but seriously, let's now get into our heavy lifting, or let's now get into the real reason why we came here today. And the audience a lot of times does not appreciate it because they say, well, why'd you waste my time? Why'd you just kind of take us on that scenic overlook and just kind of send us over here without really doing anything well? Yes?
But there's a lot of difference between telling a joke and humor. I mean, there's a tremendously big difference in the ability to communicate humorously and enjoy and have fun with somebody as opposed to telling a joke. It's a big difference.
Absolutely. In fact,
a good joke.
No, in fact, I would say most people, and I would agree, I would even say if someone asked me, I'd say don't ever tell jokes. In fact, don't tell jokes because, first of all, in terms of where America's thoughts and mores are now, we'd rather have you tell a humorous story or a humorous account or something that happened than you heard the one about the whatever. Here's the other thing. Who's ever heard this? People say I'm not good at telling jokes, and that's true for a lot of people. Help me finish this line. I couldn't tell a joke to save my life, right? Where did that come from, by the way? I'll get to you in a second, but so are you going to be mugged sometime? All right, give me your money now. I'm going to kill you, but I'm going to spare your life if you could tell me a really good joke right now. And you'd be like, ah, dang it, I just, you know, they would just, I needed more time. I couldn't tell a joke to, why'd he die? Well, he couldn't tell a joke to save his life. But, which is very a very odd statement, but everyone knows that phrase. For whatever reason, it's out there. But, I'm sorry, you're going to say we're going to say something about humor or jokes? Okay, there you go. Yeah, so I would say to not tell jokes because most people will botch the punchline. They'll mess up the one key line or they'll juxtapose two words. Whereas if you just tell something humorous that happened to you, or you recount something funny, or you say just maybe a quote that you heard from something, or something that occurred to you even on your way to work today that was odd or whatever, you're at the water cooler. Just tell it. It doesn't matter exactly how you tell it. Or if you tell it 10 different times to 10 different audiences, you'll still get the main idea across. It'll still probably be funny if you follow the four laws, but it doesn't hinge on one exact turn of phrase or some exact line, which most people are not that good at because the pressure's too much and they're thinking about a gun to their head. So I would say in general to not tell jokes. Be funny, but don't tell jokes. And then the other thing is if you can be relevant, so whatever you're talking about, if what your humor is directly bears weight on what you're talking about, you should be fine. I saw a speaker recently, actually from Franklin Covey, the Stephen Covey, Seven Habits folks, was talking about trust and how to build trust. And he wanted to illustrate the idea of of how oftentimes trust, oh, it's not my job, someone else can do it, I don't trust anyone. Just to kind of illustrate this idea, he showed a picture, which was very funny, of a kind of, looked like a rural highway where a branch had fallen and it stuck about this far into the street, and the painting crew had come along to do the white line on the side of the road, and instead of moving the branch, they went all the way around, and they left the branch in there with a line around it, which is just hilarious. But the whole point was, as he flashed it on the screen, people chuckled, people smiled, it proved his point, and then he moved on and kept happening. And what this leads us to is this idea that with humor, it can help reset your attention span clock. Indiana University has a school that studies nothing but teaching effectiveness. And so they look at what works well at grade school and high school and college, et cetera. And they did, just for fun, they checked out every study that's ever been done on attention span. And they wanted to find out what's the average attention span. So it ranged as few as, one study found attention span at 5 seconds, which I think is ridiculous, because if that were true. You know what I'm saying? Like the movie Up, you know, squirrel. You know, all of a sudden everyone looked away. If our attention spans were 5 seconds, you couldn't get through an entire sentence without being able to concentrate. That's kind of ridiculous. But there's other studies that said attention span in general in an audience situation like this is about 20 minutes. I think that's actually a little bit generous. And so when they boiled it all down, they came to about every 6 to 8 minutes in general, your audience will hang in there and be with you. Unless you do something to kind of reset their attention span clock to re-engage them, chances are, you know, attention has left the building and they'll leave. Now, just some things that are even outside of humor you can do to reset their clock is you can do things like on PowerPoint, you can press the B key and you can blank out the screen. Just all of a sudden, no one can see what's going up there. Or you can switch from PowerPoint to some other form of media, like switch to a flip chart. Or you can have them write something down in a handout. Or you can have them flip through, or you can have a Q&A session. You can have them handle a prototype. You can do all sorts of things. The one thing I'd add to that list is you can make them laugh. If you can, I'm not saying you map out your presentation and every 6 to 8 minutes a bell goes off, ding, and you have to do something funny, but just keep that in mind. You do any one of these things, you can suddenly kind of set their attention span clock and re-engage them and kind of pull them back in at least for another X amount of time. So that's where humor can also be your buddy and help people listen more. So as we talk about this thing, helps people listen more because it makes it more interesting. They'll lean forward and say, ooh, what's going on? What's happening here? And I don't know about you guys, a very tough presentation to make, in my opinion, I used to sit through them, was there was a gentleman used to be at Ralston Purina here in St. Louis, where his whole job was he would analyze the shelf sets at every store. So he would analyze, okay, if we put Puppy Chow on the bottom shelf, do we sell more than if we put Moist and Meaty on this shelf, whatever it is. He would do analyzing and conjoint analysis and all this kind of stuff, and let's say it's a lot of numbers. Okay, that's just a tough presentation to sit through. But he very smartly, at the beginning of every section of his presentation, he would flash up a Far Side comic, just a quick little Far Side comic, not just for comic relief, but because the key point, the key funny aspect about the Far Side comic directly led into what he's about to discuss. So when people sat down to hear his category and shelf set management discussions, they sat forward, leaned forward, and wanted to like hear what he had to say, and it was quite interesting, versus the typical next slide, you know, next section, next section. He made it fun. He recognized people crave humor. They crave to be entertained. They want to be enthralled. Which brings us to one of the things. Anybody know Mr. Paul Broca at all? Anybody good friends with him? Okay, I'm afraid someone's going to raise their hand one day. Paul Broca was a French scientist in the 1800s who was one of the first. It's like, oh, yeah, he's my neighbor, you know. So, that Paul Broca. Paul W. Broca. Okay, a different guy. But he's one of the first scientists to posit the idea that different parts of your brain affect different parts of your body. I mean, they knew for hundreds of years that your brain affected your body and how it worked. They didn't necessarily know there's an occipital lobe and parietal lobe and frontal lobe and all these different things. And to this day, there's still a part of the brain, the Broca region or the Broca center, which bears his name, which is essentially this. It's a part of your brain that makes comprehensible order out of input. So when you see things, it's a part of your brain that kind of helps organize, get all straight, and then kind of line it up and say, okay, should I pay attention to this? Should I discard this? Should I put it aside? Should I make a note or whatever? And so here's the problem, both good and bad, with our good friend, the Broca region of the brain. When you see or experience or encounter or read something you expected or anticipated, or it's the same old, you're going to very quickly, because our brains are just these high-powered supercomputers, you're going to quickly discount that and put it aside. Just not interested. See you later. But when you see or experience or read or encounter something you did not anticipate, did not expect, in kind of a cool way, that's when you sit up and go, oh, kind of cool. I'll remember that. That's why we tend to remember humor better than we remember other things, because it's a very whole-brained kind of thing. If you think about humor, part of you has to think it through and understand it. The other part has to feel it. It's one of those rare parts where it really takes your entire brain to kind of get it. So when they do those MRI studies and when the people are laughing, watching something, and that your brain lights up like a Christmas tree. All these different areas are being ignited and excited, etc. So I say to you all, you want to do stuff with your humor to keep people interested, to help them listen more, to lean forward and want to be interested. So example on Broca, if you drove to work, let's say tomorrow, and you left at your normal time, you arrived at the normal time, nothing really happened on its way, and there happened to be the police there just to ask you a question. They said, excuse me, sir or ma'am, do you remember anything interesting that happened on your way to work? And you'd have to answer, honestly, not really. I don't really remember anything because nothing unique happened. Broca kept saying, seen it, done it, just kind of put it aside. You might remember the song that was playing on the radio, but other than that, nothing. Let's say the next day you go to work, leave at the same time, you arrive at the same time, everything's normal, except for on your way, about halfway to work, you drive by a gentleman on the side of the road and his head's on fire, okay, in a fun way. You get to work, the same police officer's there and says, oh, excuse me, do you remember anything about your ride to work? Did anything weird happen? Anything odd happen? You'd have to say, give me a second. There was the guy with his head on fire. You know, you're going to remember that. You can't help it. That's unique and different. It stands out. That's what humor does for you. It's a part that kind of grabs some real estate in your brain that could not be claimed otherwise. So that's how it helps you listen more. And one little example to show you how to make things relevant. Let's say you're in a situation where in your association or wherever you happen to be working, there's something that's being misapplied or misused or misunderstood that's just not being done the correct way. It could be a compliance issue, whatever it might be. Some aspect of member relations, it's just not going right. Well, you could just say, folks, we got to find a way to figure this out. We got to stop doing it, et cetera, blah, blah, blah. Or let me ask you this. Does anyone here have a word or a phrase that just absolutely drives you crazy because people use it incorrectly or use it wrong? Someone have a phrase or a word that's like, when they say it just drives you crazy? Just
whatever.
Yeah, whatever. Isn't that great? Yeah. That's the mantra of the teenager today. Exactly. Makes you feel special. How about you're going to say?
Yada, yada, yada.
Yada, yada, yada. Exactly. Because ellipses, right? Or I've heard someone said, irregardless. I've heard that a lot. That's a classic, right? Yeah. Irregardless of our recent findings, I sound like an idiot. Yeah, I couldn't care less. Yeah, or I could care less. Yeah, if you say I could care less, that means you really could.
Yeah.
Right. So that's a good one. That's my wife's favorite. Well, my favorite word is the word literally. Because people say that all the time when they mean figuratively. And so a couple examples, they'll say, that made me so mad, it literally drove me up the wall. You know, I was like, could you do that again? I would love to see that, you know, because if you literally were driven up the wall by, or that movie was so sad, I literally cried my eyes out. Gross. Yeah. You know, both eyeballs come shooting out of your head, and that's just disgusting, you know. Keep your eyeballs in your cranium. That's just gross. But I think the best example of the misuse of the word literally was, of all places, NPR, where the reporter said, true story, said the untimely death of FDR literally catapulted Harry S. Truman into the White House. Now, I don't know about you guys. I was a history major, right? In addition to French lit, I was a history major. I don't ever remember seeing a catapult on the White House lawn. Like you see the man from Independence just strapping, but this doesn't seem, you know, they fly him up there. I just want to put my hand on the Bible, you know, it's like. But wouldn't that be cool, though, if they could add it to the inaugural ceremonies, right? So no matter what, if your candidate wins or not, a lot of people would tune in. It'd be very healthy, very cathartic. Oh, you want the White House? Well, strap in. You know, you're going. Well, just like the word literally, or I could care less, or you know whatever, some of these other things people say are being misused and misapplied, so is this aspect of our, you know, member relations or compliance or whatever it might be. And granted, I went on a little bit long just to kind of illustrate the point, but you could quickly bring up something that's being misapplied that's kind of funny. You didn't invent, it just kind of hurt, you heard it. You then associate or anchor it to the key point you want to make, and then giddy up, voila, you're a superstar. And by the way, and this leads us to our next point, I happen to find, you know where I found that literally example? I mean, it already bothered me, the word did, but the example of FDR and being, you know, catapulted, actually FDR wasn't, but Truman being catapulted into the White House was in the letters to the editor section of a weekly news magazine. Okay, they were actually responding to an article about how people mistreat and misuse words. Well, someone wrote in and said, I was listening to NPR the other day, blah, 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 blah. And NPR's great. Let's not, you know, disparage them. You know, the gold standard of journalism excellence. But every now and then people flub up and make a mistake. So the point is, the humor is everywhere. It's out there just to be waiting on to be held on to. The other thing I think someone mentioned, it might have been this group, they said, I'd love to use humor, but my subject is way too serious. I cannot, whatever I'm talking about, it just wouldn't lend itself well. It would really hurt my credibility and my professionalism. A couple examples to say why I think it's possible to push past that. In the 1993 Army training manual, as it relates to grenade launchers, okay, so that's pretty serious. I don't know about you guys. It's not like, I mean, it's serious. There's a line printed in the manual that says this. The slipping gear on the M203 grenade launcher can cause it to fire unexpectedly, which can make you quite unpopular with what's left of the rest of your platoon. I mean, that's kind of funny. So it drives home the point of be careful on the slipping gear. You got to know what you're doing. Or the Oscar Wilde. You think death is pretty serious. I'm at you. Death is pretty serious. Do you know what Oscar Wilde's true, literal last words were? He's on his deathbed in England, and he looks up. He's about to just die, and he says, he looks up and he points and says, either that wallpaper goes or I do. You can look it up. He died. That's, I mean, talk about going out on top. You know, thank you very much. You've been great. You know, and then he is. Any comedian worth their salt, they would want to leave on that last big laugh and just have it collapse right there. But I thought, okay, he's facing death kind of thing. The other example I would say, and this is true, is this happens about 5 or 6 times a day with a group of people that are in very high pressure, very tense, very stressful situations, and they have to deliver government-mandated regulations and just, oh my gosh, back and forth, things they've said 1,000 times, things people have heard 1,000 times. And the people who do it with panache, they do it with humor, and they do it with fun, are our good friends, the flight attendants at Southwest Airlines. Which, and we've heard this before, but I just got to give you my favorite example. Or if you think about it, when you fly on other airlines, and they're lovely, but typically people, what are people doing when they're reading through, this is your seatbelt, this is your flotation device? Yeah, they got their BlackBerry out, they got the USA Today open, they're looking through the SkyMall by all the things they'll never buy in real life, you know, whatever it might be, but they're not paying attention. Same exact information, same exact material on a Southwest Airlines flight. People are, the USA Today is put down, the BlackBerry is holstered, people are leaning forward and they're hearing stuff they've heard 1,000 times, but it's being presented in a fun way. And my best example is when I got on once, was flying to Houston. And the attendant said, you know, ladies and gentlemen, we're flying to Houston, et cetera. Make sure you, when you're seated, you know, hook up your seatbelt. To operate your seatbelt, take the metal tab, insert into the buckle, and pull tightly. It works just like every other seatbelt you've ever used in your entire life. If you can't use one, you probably shouldn't be out in public unsupervised. You know? Because does anyone say, like, what, say it again, a metal tab? I just, dang it. You know, it's not that hard, but they have to say it. So they're almost recognizing the kind of silliness of having to say it, but if they don't, if someone happens, something goes wrong, but they have fun with it. They do all sorts of crazy things. So I think if they can make it fun, you know, we can do the same thing. The key is to not try too hard. You're just trying to match up what you're trying to communicate with what you're trying to deliver with your humor. So you get your key point I want to make, here's some humor. Have them be relevant, and you'll be golden. Which then brings us to our final point, to look for it. All you have to do is look around for it. And the humor is everywhere. In fact, it's almost like, think about the last time you ever had to buy a car. You notice the day before you bought the car, you'd be driving along, no big deal. The second you decide, I want to buy a car, what do you suddenly see everywhere? Cars, good. It wasn't spaceships, no. You saw cars, what else did you see? You saw certain kinds of cars. You saw cars for sale. You drive by, oh my gosh, honey, we live next to a dealership. I mean, just stuff that you never noticed before suddenly is all right around you, and you suddenly notice cars everywhere. Same thing with buying a house or a condo. The second you decided you wanted to buy that, suddenly this antennae went up, and you started noticing things you never did before. Oh, that's a really cool street. I've never been down there. I wonder what their backyard looks like. You just suddenly were geared up to find and see these things that were in front of you all the time. You just never had the wherewithal to find it. Same thing with humor. If you can say, okay, you might not be the funniest person in the world, that's fine. Most people would say, I'm not a comedian, I'm not very funny. But everyone here, I'm guessing, has made someone laugh somewhere in their lifetime. Is that true? Everyone, okay, yes, I'm getting some nods. Let the record show that everyone nodded. So if you've ever made someone laugh, you can make people laugh again. It's just a matter of finding the stuff that you think is funny or finding the stuff that makes you laugh and then grabbing that and kind of putting it into a big file and then just kind of using that at certain key times. So I was walking once, example, I was walking through the basement of the Aon Tower, which is the old Standard Oil building in downtown Chicago, the big, beautiful white one by the Millennium Park. It's like 90-something stories. I was heading to a client, going to do a presentation, and I stopped and I did a double take, Wasn't necessarily trying to look for it, but I couldn't help it because this thing jumped out at me. Right inside the U.S. Post Office. Okay, so there's Uncle Sam, you know, the big eagle and everything, U.S. Post Office. Right inside there was a FedEx drop box. I thought that was kind of funny. Because here are these like two, you know, almost mortal enemies. You know, one is totally cannibalized, it's killing each other. And I thought, they found a way to work together. That's kind of funny. So I took out my little camera, took a shot of it so you could clearly see what's going on. And now if I'm ever in a situation where I have to use, I want to show how two maybe unrelated groups can find a way to work together, that I can use that picture. It gets a quick little smile. It's kind of fun. And so, but it wasn't like I walked to that client that day going, man, I got to find something funny. I wonder what's going on with the post office. You know, when I was, there's got to be something funny in there. I wasn't looking at it that hard. It just was, I was open to the fact that there was something kind of goofy. And how many times throughout the day do we pass stuff? Or Jay Leno's done so well with his headlines. How often they're goofy headlines, you know? We're having some drive at church and come on in, bring your old ladies and stack them in the corner. Or, you know, whatever, like, just they have goofy misprints of things that people just are very funny. But you have to be willing to look for it and find it. Or when you're reading through that weekly news magazine, the letters to the editor section, when you see something funny, you tear it out and you just throw it into a file. Now, if you want to throw it into a physical file, like a manila folder or a vanilla folder, like my daughter likes to call it, Daddy, can I borrow a vanilla folder? Yeah, they're right there next to the strawberry, you know. Or do it online. The key thing is just grabbing as much as you can, just carry it with you, and then you don't know when or where you might use it, but then it's there for you, almost like insurance, when you do need it down the road. It's too hard to look at that blank slate, or you say, here are the 3 points I want to make, and you know, out of the blue, I got to try to make something work or try to stick something on. It's very difficult. But if you have this folder, this compendium of things out there, and it could be a quote, it could be a funny cartoon, it could be an interesting picture, it could be something funny that happened to you. And the key thing is just this, whether you carry around the Palm Pilot or the iPhone, or I carry around here what I like to call my Amish BlackBerry, which is, it never breaks down. It's just my little take notes thing. So when I see something funny, I write it down, or something that strikes me as odd, I'll put it down, like the literally thing. You grab it, you throw it in a file, and then it's there for you when you want to use it down the road. But it all starts, though, with the attitude, as I would wrap up here, and I think we're right at almost the magical hour here. Open up the floor for questions in just a second, but I want to kind of leave you with this thought. Let's pretend it's another time when the Rams were really good, okay? Just for fun. That's maybe 10 years ago. I don't know. I'm just picking at a time. Okay. All right. Just for fun. And usually I got to be careful. Like, people start going, oh, we should trade this guy. Let's just stick with the idea. Or just the Rams were better at some other time. And if you think about it, let's say the Rams are great, and you wanted to display that you're a big Rams fan. You wouldn't wake up on the day, you wouldn't back into it like this. You wouldn't wake up on a Sunday and go, how can I show that I'm a Rams fan? I know. I could go to the game. I'll go buy a ticket and go to the game. Or you wouldn't say, I know I can show the way I'm a Rams fan. I can read about them in the paper. Oh, that'd be fun. Or, you know what, I could even go down a little bit early. Apparently they do this thing called tailgating. That might be fun. Or you'd say, and if I'm feeling really crazy, I'll put on my Kurt Warner jersey and I'll go down there, or I might even paint my face. I mean, that's approaching it from the whole backwards. In other words, you're trying to take these outside trappings or these outside manifestations of being a Rams fan and trying to back your way into it. That's not the way humor works. Humor starts with an attitude of, you know what, let's try to make this situation that's not so cool, let's make it more fun. Let's have a little more of a lighthearted attitude. So the appropriate Rams fan would wake up in the morning and, without even having to think about it, would read the paper, would go tailgate, would be a season ticket holder, would paint their face, would go, oh, Rams, would read everything they can online about the Rams. It just would be a natural outflow of what's going on the inside. And that's kind of what the humor thing is all about. And I admit, sometimes people come in and say, they want to kind of process themselves into being humorous. Like, what are the 3 things I can do? And then I'll be funny. Well, yes, there are some things you can do to help yourself out. They're the 4 laws of laughter. But it really starts way before that, of an attitude that you want to set up to kind of get yourself where you want to go. So humor, it starts with attitude, and then it plays itself out in tangible ways. So before I make my other final last comment, questions, comments, concerns, or feedback on using humor? Vicious personal attack? Yes?
What about in written reports, presentations, et cetera?
Okay.
That's going to be around.
It's going to stay around forever. Now, with the written thing, it can be done. In fact, I read recently about there was a manager at a company in Virginia who had a hard time people reading his weekly update memos. People are not this, they get them, throw them aside. He started adding appropriate and relevant, either a humorous quote or a funny little three-sentence, even like a three-sentence little story, or once in a while you throw in a little comic or something, that as long as it's directly relevant to what you're talking about, it can work and can have fun. Now, he did have to let them know ahead of time what he was doing. It wasn't like all of a sudden, where's this coming from? But I think in appropriate ways, it can be done. I'll admit it's a little bit harder in the written part, only because it does last the test of time. But it doesn't mean you don't have to do it at all. And you can add, the other thing too is it's not so much, is something super funny, but can you say something in a slightly humorous way, deliver the same goods because people want to be entertained? You notice there's a huge trend, it's been around for a while, but really big in business books. There's the classic business book of here are the how to do this, and here are the steps and all this kind of stuff. There's also the business book, the business fable, like the One-Minute Manager and some others, it tells the story of what goes on to someone. But along the way, either there's some humor or some entertainment, but they learn these five or six key lessons about some key principle that is displayed, and people can embrace that as well. So it can be done, it just is a little bit more of a challenge. So as I do wrap up, here's the thing. Anyone can be funny. Anyone can add humor to a presentation or a piece of written communication. It's just a matter of starting with the right attitude and following the four laws of laughter. And if you do that, I guarantee you, you'll be funny. Literally. So, thank you very much.
This has been a Steve Hughes audio program. For more information and resources to help you look and sound smart when you talk, visit hityourstride.com.